WIOX is supported by the Old Mill Restaurant, planning on opening soon in Roxbury, former site of the Public Lounge just a few years ago, and the former site of Roxbury's original grain mill and blacksmith shop 100 years ago. The new Old Mill Restaurant's decor will feature the original mill machinery and blacksmith artifacts, and be open every day for dinner, private parties, community events, and streamside dining in the summer. A place for folks to gather, talk, eat, drink, and party. The Old Mill Restaurant, planning on opening soon in the heart of Roxbury. More information at oldmillroxbury.com. WIOX is supported by the Slighter Agency on Main Street in Margaretville, a neighborhood independent insurance agency educating consumers about the importance of flood insurance, even for those who don't live in a flood hazard zone, and about coverage options. Open Monday through Friday, 8:30 till 5. More information at 845-586-2641. Or slideragency.com. WIOX is supported by the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or DelawareCounty.org.
Hi, this is Susan Shaw.
And I'm Alan Vella.
We go to New Orleans on All That Gumbo every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6.
And you are listening to WIOX Roxbury.
Live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM. And everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Oh, things are good, Ryan. How you doing?
I'm all right. I see your mic over there doesn't work, so you can lean over, huh?
Yeah, I got to lean over to the other mic, the guest mic, but that's all right. So if I go in and out, that's why.
All right. So what have you been up to, John?
This weekend was a big weekend. I fixed a lot of issues in my house, big kitchen issue.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so that took up all my time. But
all right.
It was good. Went down to bare studs in the walls and rebuilt the whole kitchen, drywall, cabinets, painted, spackled, everything's done.
What about firewood? You done?
I couldn't get firewood done with that going on this weekend.
Yeah.
So that's coming up.
I think I'm done. I'm all done with firewood, so it's over.
Good.
Yeah. I don't know. I, decided to go out in the rain the other day and finish her off. It didn't really rain all weekend. You know, they said it was going to rain, but didn't really happen. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Tonight's show is Maple Sugaring Report with Marty Giuliano. Marty, how's it going?
It's going good, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So, Marty, tell us about yourself. Where are you from and stuff?
Well, from West Shokan. We're about 9 generations over there. On my mother's side, they came to the west to the Olive area in around 1790, descendants of the George Adams family.
Yeah.
And they were farmers, and they came over from Dutchess County and, you know, made their homesteads. And the family was a large, large family and had big holdings in the town of Olive before the reservoir and even after. Some of the old homesteads are still, my grandfather's place is still on West Shokan Heights Road. Sam Adams and Delia live there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know
her.
Yeah,
my grandfather's father built that in 1875. My grandfather was 1 year old. He was born in Sampsonville, actually.
Your grandfather built that house?
No, he was one, not my great, his, yeah, excuse me, my great-grandfather.
Wow.
Russell.
Oh, and I go by that every day. So yeah. When was that built, just out of curiosity?
1875. And then one of the members, also, if you go a little farther along that road, you'll come to where they had the Ashokan view there. It's, that was Peter Eckert's. And, you know, it got in and out of the family a few times. And they had other holdings down by the Olive Park, the Davis Park. There was a big farmhouse there. Matter of fact, in 1950, when I was like one, my mom and dad went to the movies, and I stayed with my grandparents, and they were in the third floor apartment, and it caught on fire, and it burnt to the ground, and they lost everything. So that was a very large house. And, you know, basically they were farmers, and they made maple syrup, and they had gardens, and, you know, they were family farms. They weren't farms that had, like, 25 cows. They had, you know, cows for themselves, and they raised pigs for themselves, and the standard way of the Catskills in those days. A lot of bartering went on. The good fields were down where the reservoir is. There was good soil down there, so that's where the good hay was cut. And as you know, traveling that area, it's a lot of rocks and a lot of stone walls, as we talked earlier this evening. And
sure.
So it was poor ground. So that was pasture area, and only probably 50, 60 years ago, when my grandfather lived up Watson Hollow on the Axon place, he kind of took care of the fields up the valley there. And my daughter lives in one of the fields where he used to have his night pasture. And the barbed wire is right through those big sugar maples now. And it's kind of nice that she's living there. And my grandfather, actually in the 40s and late 30s, had cows there. So it's nice. We're proud of the history we have there. And my Uncle Bud, which passed away 3 years ago, he was old-fashioned as heck. And he carried on the maple syrup tradition that the family did. And he did it for 75 years before he passed. And I learned it from him and my grandfather at an early age, maybe in the late 50s.
Yeah.
And on November 7th in 2019, you had me on. We kind of talked a little bit about our family history and everything. And I didn't know that an hour would go so fast.
It does.
And so what happened was we talked about everything I did, and all of a sudden we only made it up to the inception of tubing.
That's right.
And I started tubing in the early 80s. And you thank me. I appreciate you asking me on tonight, because what I'd like to talk about tonight is I'd like to address the backyarders. And I know we have a lot of new people that have moved up out of the city and elsewhere, and they want to go back to nature. They got gardens and stuff, and maple syrup is a perfect thing for them to do with their families. And you don't have to have a lot of trees. You only have to have a few, as long as you have fun doing it. And even like you, Ryan, you have, what, 29 or 30 taps? Or
not even, 17.
17. But you had a banner year this year, you told me.
I had the best year I've had, yeah.
You made a half a gallon?
I made 0.69 gallons per tap and 12 gallons.
Well, that's so amazing, because probably because you have nice control and you got good trees that probably test, what, low threes, high twos, the sugar content?
You know, it wasn't as high as last 2 years ago, but it was about 2.5 tops. But I just got so much sap. I'll give you an example. 48 gallons of sap was common. I got that several times.
Really?
Or more.
Out of that few taps.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's over 2 gallons a tap. It's crazy.
Well, now, are they hedgerow trees along a field or that's had lime on them or anything over the years?
Well, one's in it's a horse pasture, but there's like 2 horses in it. But they're in the open. They have plenty of room to grow.
Big crowns on them.
Big crowns. One's in a spring seep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of, I don't know how else to explain it. It's not a spring. It's like the whole mountain's kind of seeping. And the other is on a hedgerow. And but they southern exposure, full sunlight.
For the people that are listening tonight that really don't know a lot about maple syrup, if they can identify a maple tree, a sugar maple, you can tap soft maples. But if you can identify your sugar maple, the best ones to tap are the ones you heard us say, a crown. A crown is all the limbs that are up and pointing out, and they create like the dome of the tree. And the more of those little limbs you have, the better you're going to have sap yield and sugar content. Now, as far as myself, I'm tapped in the woods on my brother-in-law's property, and I call his trees like telephone pole trees. They don't have many limbs. My sap content is weak, maybe 1.9 sugar content. The best that I've ever had there was a little over 2. And this year, it was as low as like 1.3. So, yeah, I envy the people that have those big crowned maples. We have a few of them on my nephew's property on Berger Road, that the old Maple Dell farm. And what I did this year, my dad's 94 yesterday, and he's in a hospital bed, and he's doing well. But we're so busy with running back and forth, my brother and I and my sisters there, that I decided not to go all out tapping this year in the very beginning. So what I did is I hung buckets, and I had about 73 total taps. I didn't have 73 buckets because sometimes I ran 2 pieces of tubing into 1 5-gallon honey bucket, food-grade bucket. So when I say I had like 73 taps, well, then that was like February 25th, and there was 2 feet of snow up in the sugar bush on my brother-in-law's property. So we coasted along for a couple of weeks, and as you know, I have a 2x6 evaporator, and you kind of need about 100 gallons to fire that. Well, with only 73 buckets and poor run, I didn't have enough sap some days to boil. So about, let's see, it was March 10th when I decided to go up on the mountain and tap the other 150 trees. So I actually lost 2 weeks of good sap runs. So there, my yield was down this year. And the yield has been down, the crop yield has been down across the state and across the Northeast. I've talked to people that have made only 2/3 as much as they normally make.
Yeah.
And one fellow that's a friend of mine up in Norwich, he told me the other day he made 85%. So we're all thinking, I'm not me, but the authorities are thinking that when it gets to be about September, not to scare anybody, but maple syrup may tighten up a little bit. And Canada has a tremendous reserve because the Canadian government subsidizes their producers, but they have to sell.
They price fix, man.
Yeah. And then what's
going to.
Yep, that's right. And they're going to. So they're going to release their market, their reserves probably in September. So there'll be syrup available, but the price may go up.
Yeah.
But I'd like to just mention my good friend Warren Krause from Boyceville. Him and his partner Bob, they run Ash Hill Canned Turf and Timber. And Warren hung around with me years ago when I was doing syrup, and he got the bug. And then him and a close friend of his and mine, Sasha Ivanov, they bought a small evaporator, and they kind of did it together. But it's like anything, and I think people listening that do it with a friend or with a partner, partnerships don't work out too good because there's always one that will do all the work and the other one will let them. So what happened was, very peacefully, Warren took over there, and Sasha was great about it, and he gives Sasha a couple gallons of syrup for that. But anyway, Warren has taken it to new levels. So as the next little while goes on, if I mention the name Warren, it's Warren Krause, because he really went technical, and he's doing a lot of good stuff.
He's having fun.
He's having fun at it. He doesn't have a lot of time to do it because his business, he's very busy, and he gets busy that time of the year. And he's a one-man show, but he's got a reverse osmosis machine, and he's got tubing, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And so, like I said, he's taking it to a very good level.
John, you recently taught the Warren, didn't you?
I did with you. That was must have been a month ago.
Yeah.
I think that was just when we were getting tapped. So, no, I haven't talked to Warren to ask him how his season went.
Do you remember how many taps he had?
Oh, I want to say it was around 300 or so.
320?
325.
Yeah, yeah.
All what I'd like to address here, because we are talking to the backyard people, it doesn't matter if you tap six taps or if you have 30 or 40. You're basically hobby, and I call hobbyists, even myself, even when I'm up to 300 taps, I still consider myself high-end hobby because I do sell SERP, but really, if I figured it out, you don't make any money at it. You kind of break even. The only people that make money in this business are the people selling the equipment because they constantly renew and say, oh, you know what you bought last year is no good, so you got to buy this. But what's funny is in this fraternity of sugar makers, which is what we all are, if I'm using something for a couple of years and I get the bug that I want to buy something new, and I've done this many times, like seven, over the last 40 years, usually whoever's hanging around with me will buy what I'm getting rid of. And it's kind of a hand-me-down thing, and it's comical. And a guy will say, well, Marty, you know, I just need a little pan 2 feet by 3 feet because I'm just going to make enough for the family. Well, he'll do that a year or so, but then his neighbor walks over and starts helping. Well, he's got to give the neighbor some, and now all of a sudden he found out that he's not making enough syrup, so, well, I better put more taps out. Well, then I got to get a bigger evaporator. Well, it just doesn't stop, but it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice family thing to do in the spring. And so what you can do if you're starting out, you can get honey, you can get food grade, like 5 gallon buckets. You can usually get them from either a bakery or somewhere. And some tubing that you can buy at a local distributor, and you can put your taps in a tree and run the tubing down into that bucket, and you should weight the bucket down on top with a rock or something because the wind will blow it away, and that can get you started. And you only need a small stainless steel pan, and you prop it up on some rocks. This I'm talking about for the very beginner now. And you'll soon find out that that's okay for your first year, and then you're going to want to be under the side of your garage under the bat wing. Then you're going to enclose that. Next thing you know, you're going to be looking at an evaporator. You're trying to convince the wife, you know, that you should do this. And so it becomes a family affair, and it's a lot of fun. And soon as you start getting bigger, and this happened to me, I started out like years ago with 240 buckets. Well, then I bought a place in New Kingston, an old farm up in Winter Hollow, and it had a lot of maple trees. And so I got a 5x12 evaporator. It was fuel oil fired.
5x12?
5x12. It was hungry.
Damn.
It drank a lot of fuel, 7 gallons an hour. And that was my first introduction to tubing. So what I like to say is I met this fella, Bob Lamb, that invented tubing. And he lived in Bernard's Bay up north of Syracuse in a little Quonset hut. He had this shop set up, and he was about 85 at the time. And he had an extruder, which is a thing that melts down to plastic, and it runs through a thing, and it makes this plastic tubing.
Damn.
Well, I bought a couple miles of it from him, and I went back to New Kingston and set it all up. And we ran the tubing down the hill to the sugar house, and we ran it the little lines into a main line. And it was quite a treat because the tubing in them days was very rigid. And you had to take like a thermos bottle of hot water with you and stick the end of the tubing in it to put the fittings on. And you have to push the fittings all the way on or they'll fall off. So I had about 2,500 taps coming down off the mountain through it. And then all these feeder lines went into a 1-inch main line, which went into a 1,500-gallon tank. And we did that for, I think, 6 or 7 years. And I eventually sold the place, and then I sold the evaporator. And it's funny because you buy this equipment, and I think I spent like $9,000 at the time, and when you sell it, you get like, 25 cents on a dollar, and you move on. So yeah. I went back to West Shokan, and I went back to a little 2x6, and that worked out really well. But while I'm talking about tubing, there's different sizes of tubing. Tubing comes in like 5/16 and 3/16. And for years, the 5/16 was what everybody was using. And then some Cornell experts did some studies, and they realized that if you did smaller tubing with, let's say, 15 or 20 taps on it, and you had a good vertical slope, you could almost, you could pull a natural vacuum because of the sap running down the line. It would pull a vacuum on the spouts, and which helps your yield. And you need like 30 feet of drop after your last tap to create this vacuum. Well, Warren Krause has taken this also to a new level, because he now, where he taps on the Upper Boyceville Road in Boyceville, he had a main line, and he had all these feeder tubes lines coming to it. Now what he's done is added line to each. He extended all the little lateral lines all the way down to his holding tank. So now he's got an area, he's got some spots where the line might be go 200 feet without a tap in it, but it's pulling a nice vacuum. So he's been able to make quite a bit of SERP and also increase his yield, the sap yield, because of that. And he's played around with a lot of other things, and he's pretty knowledgeable on it. So if you're ever down that way and want to talk maple SERP, of course, you'll probably drive Bob, his partner, crazy, but Warren's pretty much of an authority on it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm kind of going laid back. I'm going the other way, and he's going up the ladder. I'm going down the ladder.
Yeah, he's getting into the reverse osmosis. And does he have anything else, like hoods or steamways or anything like that?
Well, he bought a new evaporator 2 years ago, and he's got a fan on it that induces air, which
right.
helps your boil.
Yeah.
He's got some other – he bought an automatic draw-off, but that's we're getting outside of the hobbyist and backyarder.
Filter press.
You can spend thousands. I mean, it would be cheaper probably sometimes to go buy syrup and pay $200 a gallon for it, because it would be cheaper than you spending the money for the equipment to make
right.
it.
Yeah.
But tubing comes in different colors, and I had a funny thing happen where my brother-in-law's land is, we were tapped. And for a couple of years, I didn't tap this steep slope behind a house that I had built when I was younger. And that got sold a couple times to different people. Well, some city people bought it, nice people. So about 3 years ago, I'm over there putting tubing through the woods, and it was very, very steep. It's a steep bank, and had tubing wrapped around me, and I'm falling, and I'm not really a happy camper and cursing and stuff. Well, I looked down at the house, and it was a sliding glass door, and out comes this lady. She's got her hands on her hips, and she's, sir, what are you doing? I said, I'm putting tubing up for maple syrup. Well, I find that very offensive looking.
Oh, boy.
Well, she didn't know me very well, and that was her mistake. I looked down at her, and I said, well, you bought that house where you are now, and it had that boat that's to the right side of the house there decomposing for a number of years. I said it was a nice boat probably 50 years ago. But more than that, you got a blue canvas covering your wood pile. I find that offensive.
Touché.
So she went back in the house. Well, really, they're nice people. And a couple weeks later, she came down to the sap house, never said a thing, bought a couple gallons of syrup.
And, oh, yeah?
And I took the tubing down at the end of the season, and everything has been fine. But
yeah.
That's where I'm going with this. If you do intend to put tubing up, if there's impossible to find, like, there is a gray color out there, but it's impossible to find stuff that fits the season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's why, Marty, you were talking about different buckets before the show. And that's why I stick to metal. Because you know why? People love it.
Yes.
Because I tap on other people's property.
Yes. Well, you can't beat the traditional buckets. Now,
no.
As we were talking before we went on the air, I've bought some poly buckets that are light green with a dark blue cover. They're made in Canada. I bought them from Shaver Hill up in Harpersfield. What's nice about these little buckets, they're 3 gallons. They're easy to clean. And you can see through them. So if you're hanging buckets and you never know how much sap's in a bucket when we use the old galvanized ones, you had to go lift the lid up. And, you know, it's a lot of work walking around. Well, with these new little green buckets, you can see how much sap's in them from your truck or from standing anywhere in the sap bush. So what I do is I've got a dozen of them. And on that Berger Road property, I hung some of them around. And on the same trees, I did the honey buckets with some tubing coming down. And I knew then that I didn't have to go to that tree if it didn't have much in that green bucket. What I did find out after about 2 or 3 weeks of the season, though, my green buckets may have only had a quart or two in them. And when I went and checked my honey buckets, the 5 gallon buckets with the tubing coming down, because the spout that you put the tubing on is a closed spout. Air can't get in there. So what happens is those holes close up later than the ones that are on the buckets, because the air can get in there, and the bacteria and air is what closes your holes up, your tree heels up. So I found that I still had to go to the tree, even though my other buckets showed that I didn't have to. So, but they're nice, and they're for less than $10. You can buy them, and what's nice is they clean up nice at the end of the season. When you got the old galvanized buckets, oh my God, years ago I had a bunch of them. And when you go around taking the buckets down and you start putting buckets inside each other, now you've got the sap all over the outside of the bucket.
Yeah.
So when you go in, the sap becomes sticky and it ferments. And if you don't clean up within a few days of taking your buckets down, you've got a real vinegar-smelling sap bucket, and you have to scrub it. It stays a little bit slimy in the middle. So these poly ones, they just clean up all really nice. And now they don't want you to use the galvanized because of the solder in them. So if you sell your syrup, you cannot use galvanized. You can't use galvanized holding tanks. And even some of the poly tanks, you got to make sure they're food grade that you store sap in. And one of the things with poly grade sap tanks, the sun inside those tanks start to cook if you got them in the sun. So if you have many taps anywhere and you're running them in one of those tanks, you should put it so it's shaded, or stand a sheet of plywood against it, because I've had sap with my probe thermometer measured 70 degrees in there. And
70?
It's 70.
That's not
And
good.
That starts fermenting, and then the sap can sour. You can make lousy syrup, and you only have to sell one quart of lousy syrup, and you won't sell any more.
Right. John, what do you think? John's a backyard maple producer as well.
Yeah, I've small like you, Ryan. This year I tapped 25 trees, but I kept increasing. Got a different evaporator. Like Marty was saying, you never stop upgrading, right? No. But I went from the true backyard scale, the beginner over a barrel. Finally burned out the barrel. It rotted out after 3 seasons of that, so I decided it was time for a legitimate evaporator. So I upgraded to something similar to what Ryan has. It's a 18-inch by 4 feet flat pan over an arch, inside enclosed the bat wing of the garage, like Marty just talked about. I've been through it all. And that's where I'm sticking. I'm not going to upgrade any more than that. But anyway, so I didn't know how much to tap, so I started with 15, then went up to 18, then went up to 22, and I ended up at 25 buckets, because that's about how much I needed to feed that evaporator.
Yeah.
And I did all right. Not like you. I did a quart per tap, 0.25, 0.255 is what my number came out to. So it was the average. You know, a quart per tap is pretty much what you can expect from woods.
I think that's
maple.
Good for the woods.
I think
a quart is actually pretty damn good.
Yeah, my trees, they're kind of hybrids. You know, you can tell they were the big, the big hedgerow trees at one time, but they're now succumbing to the forest around them. So, there's good and bad with that. And I had a great season, I thought. Made more syrup than I ever have, but that's also because I tap more trees than ever.
Yeah. I'm not progressive. I'm regressive. And I have not expanded. In fact, I'm reducing taps every year. And I don't know. I'm just trying to zone in on the best trees. And next year I might even go down to 15, because these 48-gallon days, I don't know, man. For my little evaporator is a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's where it's nice for me, because my brother's retired, and my good friend, my cousin Kevin, he's retired. So we're surrounded with help, and Warren gets aggravated because he hears me talking about, yeah, I'm in the sugar house, Warren. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Warren can't go in the sugar house until 5.
Yeah. I know.
So, I'm lucky that way. I haven't figured out what I made per tap this year because of just the way I did it. I didn't think it was worth it. I know a year ago, my average was 71 gallons of sap to a gallon of syrup. That was the average. That was 2019.
So that's less than a 1.3, I would think, somewhere in there.
Yeah, it was weak. Now, I had heard horror stories this year. Merrill's, which are a big producer out by Attica, He collected his very first run. He collected 10,000 gallons, and it tested 0.04. He made 80 gallons on 10,000 gallons of sap.
Damn.
Oh, and I don't know. I never heard any more whether it got sweeter or what. and they're burning on oil. So, that's not a very profitable deal, you know.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is Maple Sugaring Report with Marty Giuliano. All right, forget that. I don't know. For some reason, the system is not playing. Anyway, this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. And tonight we're talking about the Maple Sugaring Report with Marty Giuliano, and that's okay. We got plenty to talk about maple sugaring. We don't need no stinking song. So, Marty, what do you want to move on to next? You want more tubing?
Yeah, I'd like to say...
Warning. Mm-hmm. We're already halfway through the show.
I know we are. I have to slow down. We have to start telling some lies. Sugar makers lie, too, by the way. But talk about that later. I failed to mention that the first spouts that were plastic were 7/16, which is a fairly large hole you got to put in your maple tree.
Yeah.
And if you have any questions about does it hurt the maple tree, it really doesn't. You need to use a sterilized bit. You don't use one of your bits from your work cabinet. You buy a special bit that's cut specially for tapping trees. And you drill in about an inch and a half to two, no more than two, because all the sap is usually in the cambium layer, which is on the outside of the tree, just under the bark. Some of the spouts anymore are not tapered very much, but for some reason the sap still gets in them. I've noticed that because the old spouts seem to have more of a taper.
Yeah.
So when you drove it in, it sealed, and then the sap that was around it kind of ran to the back and got in. But I'm noticing that these new spouts, they're only like 16 to 20 cents a piece. They don't have much of a taper. So I've been a little concerned about whether I'm losing sap or not getting sap. But I'll let the authorities, the PhDs figure that out. We were with the 7/16 spouts when I first got that LAM tubing. LAM sold out not long after I was there, 2-liter evaporator, and they got all the stuff, and they commercially do this, and they produce miles of this stuff, many miles. So then what happened is we went down to like a 5/16 spout, and the trees heal a lot quicker. If you have a healthy tree and you pop the spouts out, one of the mistakes that I made years ago when I didn't know any better, we would take a little stick from the ground and actually drive the little stick, a broken dead stick from the ground in the spout hole. I thought that was the right thing to do. Well, that was not the right thing to do. The tree heals on its own, and I probably was trapping bacteria back in that spout. But one time, it was funny, when we were cleaning the tubing up there in New Kingston, we had a spring right at the top of the sap line. So at the end of the season, we extended the sap line over to the spring, and we let water go down there, and it was enough of a vertical drop that the water started to go back up the lateral lines, and then all of a sudden it just stopped when it got to this one level, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. Well, we went around and we found that there was a hollow tree that I had tapped and didn't realize it, and the water when we were cleaning was going in that hole. And so I was wondering how much sap I might have lost in that hole, too, over the season. But I just laughed about that, and it's just another thing that happens to you. But
5/16 is what I use for my taps.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well, what I'm using now is, and again, I mentioned before about how you buy something, and then in 2 years they tell you, no, that's wrong. Well, a few years back, they did studies on 3/16 tubing. That's a very, very small hole in the tubing.
Yeah.
But they decided that it does create a natural vacuum if you have multiple taps on with a good slope. The only problem with it is when you're tapping your trees, there's sometimes a little minute piece of sawdust left behind in the tap hole.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't blow in there like I used to because they say that contaminates it. So I think there's these little bottles of compressed air or something you can buy, but I'm not doing that.
Right.
Anyway, that little piece of sawdust can travel down and block your tees, the little connectors that connect the drop to the line.
Yeah.
So what they recommend now is every year you should swap out your taps and your drop line and tees.
Jesus.
And, I mean, for big producers, that's not much. But, I mean, it's not that expensive. But you can get away with just cutting the spout off and putting a new one because they're cheap enough that if you clean them, you got to clean them really good. Use Clorox or use a peroxide. And it's not the same peroxide you put on a cut. And so, therefore, if you don't get those clean, you still got contaminated tubing. So the way I look at it, on 300 taps, it's about $48. It's 1 gallon of syrup it costs me to put new spouts on. They also make a spout that has a check valve. It's a little tiny ball in it. And what they've determined is that a maple tree, when the sap is running, has 10 pounds of pressure at the tap hole, and these little gas bubbles, these little bubbles that you see in the sap line as the sap is traveling down, which I always thought was air leaking into the system. Well, it's not. It's actually a hydraulic gas bubble from in the tree. Well, at night, when it drops down below 32, the tree draws back. Positive, would that be a positive vacuum, right? It pulls back 3 pounds. And Stephen Childs, which is a PhD, worked for Cornell, he said that it would actually pull back 12 feet of sap from the line into that tap. It could. So it's like if you give blood or you're giving blood, once the blood is out of your body, it's contaminated. You can't put it back in. Well, that's the way they look at it with the sap. The sap is contaminated once it leaves the tree. If it's constantly being running and then going back, that's going to make your tap hole heal up quicker. So this fella invented a tap that has a little round piece of plastic. It's a ball. So it's a check valve. So when the sap is running from the tree, it allows it to go out. The minute the tree shuts down, the ball shuts down the sap from flowing back into the tree. And most of the big producers really recommend that, and it works well for them. If you have 15 or 20 taps or 30, I don't think it's worth it. They're about, I think, 39 cents a tap. I probably won't use them. So next year, after 3 years of having the same drops with different taps, now I'm going to put brand new drops. And the drops should be around 30 to 36 inches long. And I'm using 5/16 tubing down to a 3/16 T. I figured this gets the sap away from the tree, away from the tap hole, and then when it gets down to the 3/16 line, it can then create the vacuum. So we'll see how that works. Now, I've been told because of COVID and other things that the prices of tubing and all the components to go with maple syrup are going to go up, I think, as much as 30% on tubing.
Damn.
And so I'm going to try to get some now to make up the drops for next year instead of waiting until next winter like I usually do. I'd like to move along now. We've talked about the tubing. I'd like to talk a little bit about an RO, reverse osmosis. Now, that takes a lot of the sugar, sugar out of the sap, and you got a byproduct of distilled water. They call it like hungry water or negative. It's the same you would put in your battery in your car. Warren and I prototyped in 2016 two of them for next generation maple supplies in Syracuse, and we kept the records. And we gave him the records, and he now manufactures these on a commercial level, and he builds a very nice one. And they're around $1,900. We got them. We tried them. We love them. It cuts back the amount of wood that you use, and it concentrates the sap to an RO. You know, and once you RO it to a level, like let's say if you got sapped at test 1.9, on your hydrometer out of the tree. When you pass it through this RO, with one pass, you can pick it up into like 2.5. If you run it through then again, you're up to 3-something. Now, my little RO, Warren has since added a second membrane on his, the company did for him, and his is doing a much better volume, like 200 gallons an hour. Mine still does 100. So it'll pass 100 gallons of sap through, and you'll have like 48 gallons of concentrate and 60 gallons of pure water.
Yeah.
And it's great because my evaporator will boil down about 35 gallons an hour at peak. So now if I've taken my sap to from, let's say, 50 to 1 down to like 25 to 1 or even 20 to 1, I'm making almost 2 gallons an hour now on my small evaporator with less wood. And so we really like it. And you got to clean them. They're very sensitive. They can't freeze. I would not be without one. And it's funny because I had a fella at my sugar house a few weeks ago on a little bit of an open house we had. And very smart fella. And he looks at me and he says, well, he says, with that RO, you've reduced your carbon footprint. And I go, looked at him. I said, yep, I knew that. And I didn't. But I thought that was funny that somebody would figure that out. But it's true. I burnt less wood. Once you RO it, and you're now going to run it through the... I'd like to talk a little bit about making the syrup,
yeah.
Ryan. How's that? Okay.
Hey, whatever you want.
Most syrup is, you know, years and years they've said that syrup is made 7 degrees above the boiling point of water. So I've got a little I've got a little rig there that you press and tells you what the boiling point of water is at any given day at my sugar house, and it's usually around 211.3. So you would think that at 218.3, I'd be making syrup. Well, it's not true. Yes, you can make syrup at that, but what happens is, before I ever draw any syrup out of my evaporator, I now have a digital thermometer. I'm going almost to 222 degrees. Now, once I start drawing syrup, I will make syrup down to 218, but not initially. And I'm not making huge amounts at a time. You know, we draw maybe a quart or two at a time. So we have a very controlled thing. But the best thing you can do is get yourself a digital thermometer. They're so accurate. Because the round thermometers that come with most of the evaporators, the lines are so fat that if you have to have glasses to see them, and you can be off by a couple of points just by the width of the lines on the thermometer. So I found this digital thermometer that I had bought years ago this year, and I put it in place of that thermometer, and I'm very happy with it. And I was able to get my syrup just about dead on, although I do have another finishing pan that I'll put syrup in that I draw. If I draw it off the evaporator just before it's actually syrup, if it's around 217, I put it in this other stainless steel canning rig. And once I accumulate 3 or 4 gallons in there, I'll then finish it in there. You have more control because I use propane under that. And the minute on that thermometer that it hits syrup, I can shut it off. Whereas boiling on wood, we've got some intense fire going. And we've even had to take a shovel and shovel some of the hot coals and wood out of our evaporator because you could burn the evaporator. And if you do that, it's a costly mistake.
I go 8.5 degrees over.
You go 8.5 degrees over.
Yeah.
Are you using a hydrometer or?
Thermometer.
Thermometer.
And I'd like to stress the importance of measuring at the same spot. So, for example, I hit the bottom of boiling point of water, I do it on a tea kettle and raise it up a little bit and then take my reading. I do the same thing in the evaporator.
Yeah.
So you got to be consistent on where you're reading your temperature as well. But I go 8.5 because I like it and it doesn't crystallize. You know, you want, mm-hmm. I like to get as close as I can because if you go too high, you get the crystallization at the bottom of the jar.
When you say you go 8.5, now, have you ever experienced it where you've gone to like 220 or 221?
I don't know about that because I just add 8.5 to wherever the boiling point of water is.
Then do you have a regular hydrometer with the red line on it, like, you know, the density?
I don't use a hydrometer. It's thermometer only.
Thermometer only, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because I even put in my notes here that you should have two ways of testing your syrup because everything reads different. You can have two maple syrup hydrometers that you draw off into, and they'll read differently. They say you can calibrate them. Also, one thing I didn't realize until, you know, a few years ago after doing it for many years, You should be testing your syrup at 211 degrees because it's coming out of the evaporator at 219 or 220, which is very hot and makes that it's more thin. So if you let it cool, which it cools fast if you're drawing into a larger container, then you can test it at 211 because it's a little thicker and you won't be giving syrup away. Otherwise, right. If you draw it off and it's when it's hot, you actually are making heavy syrup. Syrup is supposed to weigh 11 pounds, 1 ounce to a gallon. And if you've ever made syrup, even backyarders, and you put it in mason jars and you ever notice it's got like rock candy in it after a while, that's because your syrup, you were hotter than 7 or 8 degrees above the boiling point of water. And there's nothing wrong with that. You're not cheating anybody.
No. I don't know. I got the idea originally from Steve Miller. He's a maple producer in Margaritaville. And he goes 8 degrees, I think, over. I don't know. What do you think, John?
Oh, I started going with a hydrometer only this year. I mean, I always have a thermometer around. I check it, but I've been testing with a hydrometer cup. And this is the first year of that, just because when I bought the evaporator, the guy gave me a hydrometer. So I said, hey, might as well use it.
Yeah.
And, so I just go to the red line on the hydrometer.
Yeah, where it says 60, where it's 60 or 32, 60, right?
Yeah.
Because then I think syrup's got to be like 60 degrees if you're testing it cold, and there's another line on that same hydrometer that will float on the line for hot. And once you make syrup and you put it in like 5 gallon containers, you should really check the density the next time you pour it in the canner and you're filtering it, because it can get heavier. And also your color grades. Color grades are funny because they can change. I've been putting all my syrup in glass now. And if you can't, I move quite a bit of syrup and it doesn't stay on the shelf long, but it can get darker in the container. So but it's not that big a thing. I don't sell in supermarkets where the egg guys are going to come in and take it off the shelf and check it. But most of my customers like dark syrup. And I make dark syrup. I have a hard time making very much medium or light. And I actually, it's no secret. I do purchase some syrup from two quality people. And actually Warren, but this year he won't be able to sell me any because he didn't make enough. But he makes a very good quality syrup. And so I purchased some from Warren. We actually had the same trees tapped up behind the Phoenicia Diner up in them ledges. And it was dangerous as heck. There was icicles, 6 feet long falling off those ledges during the sugaring season. So we did it for 3 years, and I would stop and give Warren half the sap. So it's funny, we had like a combined company going, So when I do purchase syrup, it's from a very good friend, and it's very good quality. And he makes only medium or light, and I'll mix my dark, and I make some very dark, and I'll mix my very dark and come up with a light side of dark. Because maple syrup is not just one, two, or three colors. I have a little light meter that we fill a little tiny glass vial thing, and you put it in it, and it tells you just what the light transmission through that syrup is.
Right.
And golden is from 100 to 75. That means that's how much light's passing through. Then medium is from 75 down to 50, and then dark is 50 to 25, and then very dark is from 25 and down.
Yeah.
And I happen to make some very dark this year, and I got one gal from Kingston that doesn't want me to filter it. So the 3 gallons at the end of the season that we threw it away. She's glad to get it, and she wants the minerals in it. So she came last week and got the 3 gallons and was happy.
Yeah.
And the reason why I went to glass is people like to see the product. And we had this the turning mill from up in Palinville. Wonderful people. They made my labels, and I even told Warren, and now Warren's got a dynamite label, Beechwood Maple. And believe it or not, your packaging sells your product, You're sometimes, a friend of mine told me once, you're selling the sizzle, not the steak, So, and I think we're all that way, when we're buying something.
And people, they got to like the taste of it, too. It's like that Canadian from Quebec when I went to Verona at the Mabel conference many years ago now. That was, 5, 7, 8 years ago now? And he was like, when it comes down to it, he was shocked that some maple producers are actually too clean and it didn't taste like anything.
Mm-hmm.
Is that some of these big commercial guys? Because they use everything is so fast, it's boiling so fast. And then he talks about like where syrup came from, the three kettle system and stuff, and And he talks about sucrose and glucose, and but you can be, you can have syrup that's so light that it, to me, doesn't taste like anything. I don't know.
Well, this is the problem. I never, I always call things by percent, 2%. But when I heard the word Brix, I didn't know what it was. It was a Canadian told me, right? Well, that's the same thing as percent. So a lot of these guys with big commercial outfits, because they're boiling on fuel oil, they're taking these ROs. Some of these ROs have, like, when I talked about me and mine being a one post, it's 4 inches by 40 inches, the membrane that I'm pressing this sap through with a three-quarter horse motor and a pump feeding that. Well, they've got multiple banks of these membranes that are 6-8 feet long, and they're taking it to a, such a high percent that one of them told me you could make syrup without ever boiling, but it would have no maple flavor.
Right, because the cooking
the
process.
Maple flavor happens from the caramelization in your syrup pan, and that's the front pan of the evaporator. I didn't talk about evaporators, but there's a flat, there's drop flue evaporators and there's raised flue evaporators. A drop flue, the back pan and the front pan are the same level, and these flues, like a car radiator, hang down and your fire goes through them. A raised flue, the flues are the opposite way. They come up. Now, what you need is a second float in your back pan to allow the sap from the back pan to go into the front pan. What's nice about that is, at the end of the night, when you stop boiling, you don't have what we call backwash. You don't have very close to finished product in the front pan working its way back into the back pan. So I happen to have a plug. Mine is an Amish built one. It's called Sunrise. And it came with these rubber plugs with handles. They're food grade and they're rubber, but they withstand tremendous heat. And they fit the round holes in my evaporator. I can actually shut my front pans off and scoop over, and I can finish syrup in my third compartment and still be boiling raw sap in the one next to it. It works really well. Yeah. And it works good when you get, you know, if you know it's going to freeze up and if you know it's going to freeze up and you don't have a, and you want to get finished up, I plug the back pan off on my evaporator. I'll drain it when it cools off, put it in the 5-gallon buckets, fill the back pan with water and boil water back there while I add manually the unfinished product to the front. My brother and I do that. We do that often. And what happens is it allows you to keep your syrup from sitting around, because if you get a freeze up in the middle of the season, your runs might not happen for 4 or 5 days. Well, here you've got my sugar house happens to be cold, but some are heated. And you would have a fermentation process happen. So yeah, you got to be careful of that. And actually at the end of the season, a lot of guys talk about ropey syrup. Well, I've never made that, and I wouldn't have anything to do with it. But it's just before the buds come out, and it's disgusting.
Didn't Warren say that happened?
Warren had it happen in his back pan. He don't know what happened, but he had to shut down. He had to clean everything, and we don't know what caused it. And it might have been because he covered his back pan. I think he told me before it was really cooled off, and might have cooked it like. But I really don't know, because he went on after that. It wasn't at the end of the season,
right? You know? Yeah, it's odd.
I'd like to move on and talk a little bit about the canning.
Yeah, we got 4 minutes.
Well, we got 8 or 9 minutes. And so
4 minutes, yeah. Cause
we only got four?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, when you can syrup, you should can it at 180 degrees and don't go above 190, because you'll get foam on your syrup in your canner. And when you're filling your jars, they'll get foam on them, and the foam don't go away. It doesn't hurt anything. It's just that you'll have a bunch of jars that are perfect, and all of a sudden there's one or two with the foam on them, the bubbles, and it doesn't mean anything. But that's why you shouldn't go much higher than 190. And if you make a mistake and don't watch your thermometer and it goes up into where it almost boils, you probably should filter it again, because in the finished product of the syrup, there's nitre, which is a sap sand, and we run it through a synthetic. It used to be felts, but I call them synthetic felts. And it takes that nitre out. Well, you can actually create more nitre if you boil your syrup, finished syrup again. So you should just watch that. And like I said, glass is the best way to do it.
Yeah. Oh, we're still good. We got 3 minutes.
You're still good? I want to tell a funny story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This my grandfather told me this story years ago. You know, in every town in the Catskills or wherever, you always got a guy that, I'm going to use an example. You know, in the fall, if you say, God, you know, I had 32 degrees this morning. Well, if you run into that fella the same day, he had 28.
Right.
If you shot an 8-point buck, he got a 10, and it was 170 pounds, but he never weighed it, but that's what he tells you. Well, years ago in West Shokan, my grandfather lived on a place, and they tapped the trees and then had a falling out with the owner, and they had to move, but he had tapped the trees there. So what happened was, I think he gave the owner maybe a gallon. They didn't have too many trees tapped. He gave him a gallon of syrup for the rental. Well, the fellow up the road saw that owner, which was a city guy, and said, what's Mart giving you for rent on them trees? And I think the guy said, well, a gallon of syrup. He says, well, I'll give you two. So my grandfather went up there with my Uncle Bud the next spring, and the owner said, Mart, there's going to be another fellow tapping here. Oh, really? Yeah. He said, what's he going to do? He says, he's going to give me 2 gallons. Well, that's good. Okay. Well, my grandfather had a 29 Model A, and he had two poles driven under the bumper. They had no tractor in them days. They had two poles driven above the bumper and over the rear end, and they had some boards there, and he used it as a truck. So what did he do? The season got going along. Well, one night, he got my uncle, and they filled 2 10-gallon milk cans with water. And they went up there after dark, and they filled some of the, they put water in that man's sap buckets. Kind of a mean thing to do, but they were kind of like, you know, they had gotten cheated. So the season went on, and they did it several times. And my grandfather saw this individual down at the store after the sap season, and he said, Mart, he said, how did you ever do up there on those trees, he says, of accents? He said, you know, if I didn't, this gentleman said to him, if I didn't know better, he said, I would have thought I was boiling water. And my grandfather looked at me and said, well, maybe you were. And I don't know if that was a homemade story, but I thought it was funny. And you know,
I thought he was going to say, no, it was 3%.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 3%.
And the guy burned a heck of a lot of wood, too.
Yeah. Man. That's, I guess they got a little revenge, huh?
Yeah, Catskill Mountain Justice.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's all the time we have on From the Forest. If you missed it, it was Maple Sugaring Report with Marty Giuliano from West Shokan, Ulster County. Marty, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And see you next week with Gary Mead every third Wednesday. That's all I got.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Got another fast hour.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river